Hello, and welcome to the Shotgun Sportsman, a podcast about handgun hunting brought to you by Handgun Hunters International. My name is Ryan Hoover, and I'm your host. I believe handgun hunting is the most rewarding way to hunt, and it's something I want to share with as many people as I can. If you are at all interested in getting your own game meat, I want to challenge you to a way of hunting that is good for both your spirit and your body, so you can become the confident, self-reliant person you were meant to be. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Shotgun Sportsman. Today, I have a good one. Tank Hoover, who is a, besides having a really cool last name, is a well-known author. He writes for American Handgunner, Guns Magazine, basically FMG publications. He's been doing it for a while. If you don't follow him on social media, you should, because he's just always got some very interesting content. But before we get into that interview, I just want to make a plea that if you are interested in handgun hunting, please reach out to us. I run an organization called Handgun Hunters International, but you becoming a member of that is secondary to me. You becoming a handgun hunter is really what it's all about. So if you have any questions, if you're at all interested in it, please reach out to me. If I don't know the answer, I probably know someone who does. You can go check out handgunhuntersinternational.com if you want to see what we're about there. Of course, we'd love to have you join if you are interested, but don't feel pressure to join if you're interested in becoming a handgun hunter. Just reach out to us. You can email me at ryan@handgunhuntersinternational.com. And I'd love to talk to you. I'd love to just see what you're thinking, and maybe there's a way we can help you get into the sport. So think about it. All right. I hope you all enjoy my interview with Tank Hoover. Tank Hoover, thank you so much for agreeing to do the podcast with me today. I really appreciate it.
Hey, I'm happy to be here, Ryan.
Yeah, so it's great to talk to just kind of a classic gun crank, as I always read about him in the past. And I know, just following you on social media, you got your fingers into everything. Handguns are not just, you're, like I said, you're just a gun crank, and you're always very entertaining. All the things you do are very entertaining and informative. But just because we could probably talk forever, and this is a handgun hunting podcast, can you kind of tell me, like, what is your path, or what was your path into handgun hunting, and kind of some of your favorite experiences about that?
I probably started like most guys. I started out hunting groundhogs as a kid. I got my first bolt action rifle at the age of 8, a Harrington and Richardson Plainsman, and I had a scope. Got into deer hunting around age 12, had a scoped Remington 700. The rifle started accumulating, and there are bold actions. And then I was pretty successful. And then, like everybody else, you start wanting to get a challenge. So then I started going to iron-sighted lever guns, single-shot rifles, then muzzle loaders, and then along came the handgun. And this brought me up about, mid to late 80s, like everyone else reading Ross Seyfried articles. And it just, something really caught my attention there. Mm-hmm. And, also by reading Ross Seyfried, casting my own bullets and hand loading followed, because I just thought, I'm like a true do-it-yourselfer. If I can do it, put myself in the hunt as much as I can, that's what I like doing. And that included, hand loading my ammunition. And then the next step, of course, was just making my own bullets. And you just get a lot of self-satisfaction from that. And again, as you challenge yourself with the harder guns to use, you get that satisfaction. It just ups the level. And with the handgun, I took my first animal out in Idaho in 2009, and that started out, it was around 2009 that I got on the internet, and we were I was a county cop at the time, and we had to go to an email class, and I'm like, oh my god, I don't want to learn about this computer stuff, I'm not a computer geek. And we had a really good instructor, and she said, I'm going to show you how to get online, and you guys can surf the web. For a half hour, just put in Google whatever interests you, and it's going to open up a world to you. And so, of course, I started putting in gun stuff. And next thing you know, I got on the gun broker. And by the end of that time, I had two bids on a couple of guns. And so it just carried on. And then I got into, the gun forums, Ruger Forum and singleactions.com. And I kept noticing this guy popping up that was killing all the stuff from badgers to elk to bear to deer. And it was Dick Thompson, the famous six shot. And I'm like, this guy's the real deal. And it was during the same time my mom was dying of cancer. So that was my reprieve. I'd come home from work late at night, rip my vest off, sit down at the computer to unwind, and I'd go to the Ruger Forum and read about the antics of Dick Thompson. And we got to talking, through the internet, and he invited me to an elk hunt out in Idaho. And I'd always been a little apprehensive about going out west because I knew as soon as I saw the Rocky Mountains, I was going to fall in love and I wouldn't want to go back home. Well, that's exactly what happened. And I got out there, I was like, this is unbelievable. I'm here in the land of Elmer Keith and, hunting with Dick Thompson and Glenn Swigert and a couple other guys. And we had a heck of a time. And like I said, I got my first handgun kill. It was a cow elk. And I was using a Ruger Bisley 45 Colt, hand loaded with, of course, a 454, 424 Keith bullet, because I was in the land of Elmer. Loaded over 20 grains of 2400, and that load goes out, mid 1250 or so, and elk was about, the laser at 121 yards, and I got a nice broadside shot, double lunged her, and at the shot, she swung her head around, bit at the entrance, like she was stung by a bee, took three wobbly steps, and fell over. Wow. And I thought, holy heck. I mean, a rifle couldn't have did better than that. And I was like, I was in awe. I was in shock and awe. I just couldn't believe it. That was the start. And then that was like in early November. And then Maryland firearm season started. And I was fortunate enough that I got a buck and a doe on opening day at Maryland. And then Pennsylvania, I went. I got a buck with a handgun. And it's like I had a great start.
Yeah, sounds like
and,
it.
I couldn't have been happier. And then I had access to a lot of properties. And, of course, I was a police officer then. So it was a lot easier to get permission to hunt on places. And guys warned me. They said, well, when you retire, you're going to see who's really your friends and who's not. And when I retired, a lot of my hunting spots dried up. So it's been a struggle. Finding a decent place. And then, I'm not a purist handgun hunter. I love it, but I also love my rifles and muzzle loaders. And, I take them out for walks too. So
yeah, absolutely.
The guys that are the purists, I have the utmost respect for them because you're limited, with your shots and range. And, a lot of times you're going to go home from the hunt, with a tag. And, after a few years of that, you just start, you want to kill something. So,
well, that's funny, talking about the purist philosophy, I've always kind of been, I guess you could say anti saying, because you could get into the weeds about what is purist, because even handgun hunters who don't hunt with rifles have disagreements about what pure hand, like if somebody shoots a scoped XP 100, there is somebody who doesn't think that's handgun hunting because it's basically a rifle without a stock. I'm doing air quotes here, which for me, how far are you going to take that? Is it you have to use iron sights? And then is it, well, I use a knife. Well, I use a rock. How are you going to get into purist?
Right.
And so I think it's totally cool, having varied interest. And, I still consider you a handgun hunter. Yeah.
We got to get over the pettiness of that. As hunters, we got to stick together because Lord knows the anti-hunters, they stick together on everything. And, the semantics of what weapon you use or gun you use has no bearing.
Right.
I love all guns. I, guys say, well, what, you know, it kind of gets my goes where, you know, guys will knock Glocks or any other polyframe striker fired gun. But, you know, I love shooting those too. I mean, every gun's got its place and purpose.
Amen.
And they're all a lot of fun. I enjoy it. I'm not going to limit my fun by just shooting one type of gun. I'm going to shoot them all.
Well said. I couldn't agree more. And my philosophy has always been, especially, you know, with HHI, with Handgun Hunters International, we say, you know, if no matter if you only handgun hunt or you handgun hunt and you also hunt with a rifle, whatever legal and ethical means you choose to use, if you're hunting with one of the modern guns or if you're, you know, more traditionalist single action revolver type hunter, there is room for you under our tent, because as you say, we got to stick together and hunters as a big group for sure. But handgun hunters, we're kind of a small group. And so it's even more important for us for sure.
And it's, you know, same with archery, you know, you have the mm-hmm. longbow society versus, you know, the compound and the crossbows, and it's just
exactly
it, we just need to stick together and use it. The main thing is, you know, we're out there in the field enjoying it.
Couldn't agree more. But moving into some choices, I'm curious, when you do pick up a handgun to go hunting, what are the types that you gravitate towards to go hunting with?
I tell you, I have an immense respect and love for the Ruger Bisley hunters. I think you get the biggest bang for your buck with that gun, and you can shoot it with iron sights when your eyes go bad, or if you want, you can put a scope on it very easily. And it's funny what I've always found when I put a scope on a handgun, I don't like seeing how much wobble I actually have.
Right.
And it's magnified. And when you have iron sights, you don't notice it as much. And you know, when you, it seems like I'm quicker on target and I'm more apt to squeeze the trigger quicker than, you know, with the scope trying to keep those crosshairs rock steady.
Interesting. Yeah, that's and, very true.
But I also enjoy, you know, using the iron sights because it's more of a challenge, and I just feel more self-fulfilled for myself if I take something with iron sights. Mm-hmm. And like I said, if guys want to use scope, that's fine, because it's really, in my opinion, a scope's almost a hindrance, because you just see that wobble there. You know, it's hard.
Yeah.
And plus, it's, you know, it's harder to pack the gun in and out, you know, the woods, and, you know, the whole, you have to get special holsters. And
Yeah, there definitely is an added level of equipment and stuff for that. Well, it makes sense, you know, right? I've seen a lot of your stuff about casting bullets and powder coating, making your own mold, stuff like that. Really fascinating stuff. And that, like, falls right in line with a single-action iron-sided revolver for hunting.
I enjoy the, you know, the older tradition, I guess you'd say, you know, air quotes, you know, like you said, the traditional aspect, but, you know, there's a lot of the modern stuff. And really, if you look like the younger guys, they might start with the modern stuff. Like they might start with, you know, a polyframed gun. Mm-hmm. You see them at the range and then they see the old grandpa, you know, a guy like me, I'm shooting single actions or double action revolvers. And they get curious, like, hey, what's that? And then I'm like, hey, you want to try it? Yeah. You know, this is where it started. And, you know, they get drawn to it, and they shoot it, and they're like, wow, that's neat. And I can't think how many people I've seen that I've encouraged, or you could say corrupted. But, you know, then a couple months later, you see them, they have their own revolvers, which is great.
Absolutely, yeah.
That works with, you know, inline muzzle loaders. They start out with that, then after shooting that, there's like, hey, there's no, you know, mystical magic involved. It's pretty basic and simple. And then they look into the black powder, and next thing you know, they're shooting side hammer muzzle loaders. So I think it's kind of, there's a human aspect that you want to kind of go back to the, you know, what started it. So
that's a good point. Absolutely. So that segues into a good another question that I always ask for people who are experienced shooters and or hunters. If you meet someone who knows about handgun hunting and they ask you, you know, I'm interested in trying this out, what is the first thing you're going to tell them to do? What's the first piece of advice?
I would say be prepared to pass on shots, because you're not going to be able to take that 150, 200 yard poke that you take with a scoped rifle. Mm-hmm. That was easy. I mean, most hunters can take that shot and be successful. But with a handgun, I mean, you're going to start out, your actual effective distance might only be 25, 30 yards. And, you know, it'll extend over time. And you got to practice. And, you know, going back to Dick Thompson, he had a saying that I love repeating. He said, you never master the handgun. You need to practice with it every day. It's a gun of diminishing skills, in that if you don't pick it up and shoot it, dry fire it, your skills are just going to diminish. Mm-hmm. And you need to stay up with it. Whereas most guys I know, I mean, they, you know, the rifle hunt, they can shoot a rifle, set it down, pick it up, you know, a week before hunting season, make sure it's sighted in, and that's all they do. And, you know, that's it. They don't have to practice. Whereas to be a handgun hunter, you have to, it's like archery too. You have to be dedicated and you have to practice to be effective.
That's, I'm glad to hear you say that. And that is kind of a different perspective than some of the other guys who've been doing it for a long time have told me. However, you know, usually the answer to the first piece of advice is get yourself a 22. But I like where mm-hmm. I like where you're going with that, in that, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but you're kind of saying, listen, you got to mentally prepare if you're going to jump into this, because it's
I mean, it's like running a marathon. You're not going to say, okay, I'm going to run a marathon and then sit on the couch for a year.
Right.
And you're not going to complete it. Whereas, you know, if you go out there and you start running a couple miles, and then every week you increase by a mile or two, and then, you know, build up to it, the hits will become natural. They'll be easy.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, as far as, you know, handguns, I mean, starting out, sure. I mean, I'm big proponent. If I can't shoot, I'll pick a gun up and I'll just start, you know, snapping at something on the wall. Mm-hmm. And that's better than nothing. So,
right. Absolutely. My 8-year-old daughter killed her first deer this year. And in addition, yeah, it was so great. And in addition to, you know, going to the range and practicing, she was shooting a 223 Contender pistol. And mm-hmm. So in addition to going to the range and practicing, we would dry fire on deer videos. Like, we would watch deer videos and dry fire, or I would pause it and have my kids go up and point to where you're going to aim and all that stuff. So, right, there's a lot of work that can be done and that needs to be done outside of the live firing range. Of course, you want to make sure that your gun's unloaded and safe.
And even just like watching the hunting videos, you know, to get in the correct mindset,
mm-hmm.
that being comfortable, like being able to spot the deer, because, you know, I don't think I've ever shot a deer that saw me before I saw it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important to, you have to be able to see that deer before it can see you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, you can have your preparation going on, you know, when it gets past this tree, I'm going to pick the gun up. When it gets to that bush, I'm going to be ready on the other side when he comes through, and, you know, think it through, have a plan.
Yeah, that's also great, fantastic advice. But one other thing that you said that I think is just one of the reasons that it kind of takes a lot of self-control to do this. Same with bow hunting, same with, you know, traditional muzzle loading, anything that pretty much ups the challenge and decreases your range, is setting your own personal range limitations. Because, you know, if you say, I cannot reliably and humanely dispatch something past 50 yards, and then, you know, kind of this buck of a lifetime walks out at 75 yards, you got to be able to tell yourself no. And that's not easy at all.
No, not at all. And it's kind of a catch 22, because if you're limited to 50 yards, shooting a deer 50 yards and closer is harder than past 50 yards, mm-hmm. because as soon as that deer gets close, it just, your movements are exaggerated. Mm-hmm. It's easier for the deer to pick up on them. And, you know, it just, the closer it gets, the faster your heart beats. And you're like, you know, your heart's trying to jump through your throat. You're like,
right,
stay calm, trying to suppress that adrenaline. And then when you get the shot off, then, you know, just let it dump for all of its worth. And then you just enjoy the moment.
That's funny. That brings me, so you said you're in Maryland. What's the typical hunting setup in Maryland? I'm always curious, because I'm sure it's vastly different from where I am in Central Texas.
Yeah, Maryland's pretty diverse in that, like, I'm in central Maryland, which is the busy part of the state. Like, I grew 20 miles from D.C. Mm-hmm. But then when you get to western Maryland, it's basically like the panhandle of Maryland. It hangs over into West Virginia. For ideal purposes, they might as well just annex it to West Virginia because it's all in the Appalachian Mountains. And then the eastern shore is all your watermen on Chesapeake Bay, and they're very rural. And it's funny, all the liberals in Maryland live in the central part of the state. Mm-hmm. All the, I say good people, they live on the western Maryland and eastern shore, you know, the conservatives, the mm-hmm. you know, your farmers, your chicken ranchers, yeah. your watermen, those kind of people. And those are your hunters. But it does provide some pretty liberal hunting seasons up until 3 or 4 years ago. Like for does, it was unlimited, mm-hmm. like in my county and the surrounding counties, because we just had an abundance of deer. And there's, you know, they hide in these developments or mm-hmm. like these little, I don't want to call them a farm, but like a, you know, a 3 to 5 acre mansion with that kind of ground. I mean, it's perfect for deer.
Yeah.
And, you know, you could shoot a buck during the firearm season, muzzleloader season, and archery season. Mm. They've since cut that down to one buck, and then you can buy a bonus buck tag. Mm-hmm. And they've limited the does to, I believe it's 10. But you might be like, oh my God, 10 deer.
Yeah.
That's still a lot. So it's pretty neat. And then if you go on the eastern shore, you know, we have the Sitka deer.
Yeah.
That adds it. And I know at one time they said if you hunted every county and took advantage of, you know, your buck does and Sitka deer and mm-hmm. whatever, you could kill like 26 deer in a season.
Wow.
And then heck, around here there's also the farm deprivation tags too.
Yeah.
I have a friend that he got in good with farmers, and he's been killing a lot of deer, and he donates them, you know, to the mm-hmm. food banks and stuff because yeah. he just takes so many. But he's feeding a lot of people by doing that. He's also keeping the farmers happy.
Yeah.
And he doesn't mind shooting flat tops though.
So. Yeah. We have another member named Dr. Larry Rogers, who in West
yep,
Virginia,
yep,
the hitman, yeah, who, man, yeah, he has quite a count over the years of depredation.
Isn't it something like he's like over 2,000 or something?
Yeah,
I mean, it's something crazy in his lifetime. And then his groundhogs are, I don't know,
What's almost crazier than the numbers is the fact that he kept all these records for, I mean, he is fastidious,
yeah,
man.
Yeah.
He's such a great guy. And he always is meeting people and posting about all this stuff. He's just such a cool guy, but he also feeds a lot of people with that brought it to my mind.
And I know he goes out to visit Dick Thompson for the mm-hmm. Rock Chucks in May. And mm-hmm. he said he'll go out, you know, for a week and it's nothing for him to knock out, you know, a couple hundred rock chucks.
Yeah. 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 And he said he started doing that because he pretty much cleared out his normal hunting areas for being so successful over the years.
Yeah. And what's funny about that is, you know, Dick said the rock chucks, they hibernate and they only come out for like 2 or 3 weeks out of the year.
Huh.
They come out, they feed, they mate, and they go back to bed.
Interesting.
How's that for a lifestyle?
Yeah, I was going to say, what a life. Man, jeez. Well, so in Maryland, is it a lot of still hunting, or do y'all do stands? I mean, I assume it's pretty...
No, it's all a stand. Yeah. You know, it's so congested here, like Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. Maryland. You know, if you still hunted, all you would do would be push the deer into some other person that's in a stand.
Gotcha.
So it's just... You know, you get in 45 minutes before sunrise, buckle yourself in, and, you know, your opening day, it's, you know, you stay all day from dark to dark. Mm-hmm. And it's just, you know, and of course, the impatience of the other hunters, that's what usually your good times. Like 9 o'clock's a great time because guys get tired of sitting for like 3 hours and they mm-hmm. get up and start walking, they get cold. So they start pushing deer. They get hungry. They want to walk back to the car. So they're pushing deer, and then, you know, coming back after lunch, like about, you know, 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon is a good time. And then of course, you know, twilight. So.
Yeah. That's one of my favorite maxims of hunting is, you know, how are you successful? You got to be out there. And
yeah, you have to be out there. Yeah. And around here, it's you have to be patient, whereas mm-hmm. it's neat. Like out west, and like Africa, it's all spot and stalk. You know, you're out west, you're finding a good vantage point, and you're glassing around, you see something, you know, 1 or 2 miles away, and you want to check, see how you're going to do your approach and read the wind and go after it. And then Africa is kind of the same way. You know, you can drive around and then, oh, there's something, you bump it and then park the vehicle and you plan to stalk, you know, that way too. Right. So it's just, it's different, but it's a lot more fun. It's easier when you're moving around. I tell you, to sit, to hunt from a stand, I mean, it's some people can't stand it. They hate it.
Right.
Tim Sondel said, he goes, I will not hunt from a stand. He's from, you know, they own a Buffalo board, ammunition. Yeah. He said, I hate it. I'd rather walk around and spot and stalk and not get anything than sit and stand all day.
So in Texas, you know, we hunt from stands or blinds, we call them a lot. Mm-hmm. And when I first started handgun hunting exclusively, it was the first time I also started spot and stalking around the hill country of Texas with a buddy of mine. Right. And, you know, for a couple of seasons, I was just like, man, I don't want to sit in the blind again. This is awesome, et cetera, et cetera. And then I sat in the blind because I think it's a great way to teach new hunters. And I thought, you know, this is a skill too. Sitting still for hours at a time is a skill too.
I mean, it takes a mental toughness. I mean, there's no question, especially when it's cold.
Yeah.
You know, you just got to sit still, you know, do it and sit still and grin and bear it.
Well, yeah, thanks. I know we didn't plan to talk about that, but I'm always curious about people's home turf. So, moving in, I mean, you're a pretty prolific writer. You write articles for FMG publications. And, you know, I first saw you in American Handgunner because we share the same last name. And I was like, hey, you know, another Hoover. But
a lot of Hoovers in Pennsylvania.
And funny note, you know, I have a standing deal with all of my friends and anybody I share a hunting camp with. If you can find a new way to make fun of my last name, I'll buy you a drink.
Yeah, you probably heard all the same.
Oh, yeah.
Edgar Hoover vacuum cleaner.
Yes, exactly.
Herbert Hoover.
Yep. Yeah.
Yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, that's funny. And another funny thing, Herbert Hoover and I have the same birthday. So,
no kidding.
Yeah, it's just weird. But anyway, so knowing you from your articles and, like I said, being a general gun crank and, you know, someone who knows people in the industry and kind of pays attention to that kind of thing, I'm curious, how do you think the industry and the gun media world perceive handgun hunting? And I'll just say you can't hurt my feelings if it's bad news, but I'm curious of what you think about it.
You know, I've always wondered why they did, you know, the industry did certain things, and I've come to learn it's driven by the almighty dollar. Mm-hmm. Whatever sells, that's what they're going to make. And, you know, for the life, like I love the Thompson Center line, you know, the Contenders and Encores. And when Smith and Wesson bought them, I was like, oh man, this is going to be great. They're, you know, Smith and Wesson, they have the pockets and the facility to be able to crank out these barrels and frames and stuff, and they just sat on them. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I was so disappointed. And I'd ask around, I go, what's going on with this? What's going on with this? And they're like, hey, if we're not making it, it's because it's not selling. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you said yourself, you know, with handgun hunters, you know, we're a limited lot. And then when you go to the single shot route, that even cuts it even more. And I just wish they would bring it back, but I'm thankful that I got into it during the tail end of, you know, when Thompson Center was still making stuff. You know, you could buy a used barrel on eBay for, you know, $125, $150.
And yeah,
now the prices are just astronomical. I mean, a factory TC barrel is $400 or $500, I think, going right now.
Oh, yeah. Depending on the caliber, especially, then yes. I mean, I've seen them go for crazy.
I think
crazy
Ken
money.
Kelly owns about half of them.
Yeah. So. Yes, I know. He does. Yeah, every time I talk to Ken, he's like, oh my God, I got one of those. Oh my God, I got one of those. Yeah. I love that guy.
And it's funny because they just seem to migrate towards him.
He does.
He'll go to a yard sale or somebody comes in or a customer, I want to trade this in, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I got a bunch, but I think I might be able to work something.
That's so true. That's so true.
He's a great guy. And I tell you, this is an interesting fact I want to get on. I think guys would like to hear.
Yeah.
We all know his dad, Larry Kelly. I mean, he's like the handgunning god in my book. I mean, he's probably done more. And Ken told me one of the main reasons he wanted to be a handgun hunter, this is Larry, was, you know, the company was just in the outskirts of Detroit, Michigan. And there was a lot of handgun crime. And Larry said, I want to do something to show something positive that can be done with handguns.
Yeah.
And that combined with, you know, promoting his Magnaport, you know, that was it. But his main reason was showing something positive with handguns.
He sure as heck
just think
did.
That's a, yep.
Forever and always, the member numbers for Handgun Hunters International, number one and number two, will be reserved for J.D. Jones and Larry Kelly because they were, you know, like godfathers
and they,
of that.
You know, they were the best of buddies. Ken said, oh, my God, I'd come in and, you know, Dad come in the office first thing. He got a cup of coffee and he called up J.D. and they'd have a 45-minute chat every morning.
Man, that's great. I love those old touch points of history.
Yep.
So back to the industry stuff. I get what you're saying about the whole the almighty dollar thing. That makes sense. You know, for a while I was in the production machine shop world, and it is just a dog eat dog world. And with the whole the popularity of the kinds of guns that are popular, you know, the ARs, the long range rifles, the carry guns, all of those guns, it's hard for them to keep up, I'm sure, with that demand in order to kind of segment off some of the handgun hunting. But I am curious about, like, so some of the, so like TC pretty much is defunct now as far as, unless someone wants to buy it and revive it. But the whole people who do make hunting handguns that are like Ruger is a perfect example. I see that Ruger still makes these guns. I just don't see them as available because it doesn't seem they're making them in the quantities. Now, I know all the reasons about, like, they're harder to make, they're more time, et cetera, et cetera.
The biggest thing, I think, with COVID just, you know, it wiped out, you know, people quit coming to work and that just squashed, and, you know, not just the gun industry, but every industry. And people started getting money for not working, and then people are like, well, why should I work when I'm getting a check for the same or more?
Yeah.
And it just, it hurt, you know, those employees, but, or those manufacturers, because they just don't have the employees. And it just, everybody I talk to that has a business, and this is gun and non-gun, it's like, I can't find people that want to work.
That's a good
point. And, you know, you
need
somebody to put the stuff, you know, to make the stuff. And that's why you're seeing, besides, you know, tax laws and stuff, but you're seeing these come like Smith, you know, they moved down to Tennessee, you know, because, you know, Texas, that's a hotbed too that, you know, people are moving into. It's business friendly and people want to work. So, but if you don't have people making it, that, you know, what are they going to do?
That's a good point. I hadn't thought about the labor shortage, and I had a company making rear grip pistol stocks for me at one time, and they had to stop and I talked to them. It was the same thing, you know, if people can get paid the same or more to stay home, why would they come to work? But that's a sad deal. Well, what about the media side of it? You know, do you know Larry Wysoon, the, Mr. Whitetail?
I know of him. Yeah. I've met him a couple of times, just, you know, cordial.
Sure.
Hi, how you doing?
Yeah. He and I talked recently, and he says, because he does a TV show, I forgot, which, I'm sorry, Larry, I forgot exactly which one he does now.
Well, he's been Chasing the Hunter's Moon.
I think that's right.
That one, and I don't know.
But anyway, he said that when they feature handgun hunting content, they always get such great feedback. So I'm just curious, and I know that American Handgunner, you know, Mark Hampton, who is just a super, super nice guy, probably the most experienced living handgun hunter, world traveled guy, you know, the guy that we all call when it's like, hey, what's it like to hunt in, you know, I've never been there, as Stan, but so I'm just curious about, especially like video media. I would think that because it's, you know, quote unquote, more novel, that it would draw more eyes. What do you think the media portion of this feels like?
You know, I think like the magazines that are geared towards hunting, the handgun articles are popular because it's something different. But like when I do something with FMG, and we encompass, you know, a wide scope of things, the hunting articles aren't as near as popular as some of the other stuff I write. And I think it's just, I mean, obviously some hunters follow it, but I think there's a lot of people that there's a lot of gun people that don't want anything to do with hunting. And they would rather, you know, read about self-defense or history of, you know, World War II, you know, surplus type stuff or whatever. But, you know, and then like the hunting shows, I think the reason why handgun hunting would be popular is people, it's obvious there's a challenge involved there. And so it's like, wow, look at that. That's, you know, God shot that. Cause most people that have ever shot, first time they shoot, they go to the range and that, you know, they can't hit a target at 10 yards and they're seeing somebody knock a deer or Cape Buffalo or whatever down at, you know, 75, 80, 100 yards, 150, whatever the scenario might be.
Right.
And they know how challenging it is.
Yeah. I guess so. My question is, how come we don't see more of that?
Probably because the people that have the names that are making these videos aren't handgun hunters. And, you know, Larry's known for it. And he's done it. And, but, you know, you think about it, like some of the hunting personalities on TV and he's about it. And once you know, if it's your show or whatever, you know, these guys, they work hard and, you know, to get there and not to knock them, but, you know, there's just not many, you know, many if at all, any handgun hunters.
It's one of those things, which comes first, the chicken or the egg, because I kind of feel like how many people would we draw if it was out there more, which is kind of what Handgun Hunters International is trying to do. And versus are people just not interested? Because a lot of, you know, I've never introduced somebody to handgun hunting that they said, I'm not going to do that again.
Right.
I mean, it doesn't mean that they're going to drop the rifle or the bow or whatever it is. And I kind of feel also, you know, like you have said about the challenge of it, that these days, you know, with all of the things going on and the new generation being more interested in getting their own food, that they would want to pursue a more challenging way, which is, in my opinion, one of the reasons for the popularity, resurgence of the popularity of bow hunting. But yeah, it's always a nut I'm trying to crack.
You know, something that's interesting I'm seeing, you know, on social media, there seems to be a resurgence of not backwoods skills, but like the way our grandparents, like people want to can, you know, jar their own food. They want to grow their own vegetables. They have their own chickens for their eggs. And I think that there is a market that we could gear towards those people because the next step is, okay, you're doing all this. It's time to, you know, take your own protein and learn how to whack a deer. And somehow they need to target those people. And I think, it could be a way to grow the numbers in the ranks.
Yeah, of all kinds of hunting, actually.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I just think it's kind of neat that, you know, people are kind of looking back. Because I tell you, it's just, you know, you look in the grocery stores and I started looking at it, you know, and it's true. I mean, they sell so much crap.
And it's so expensive as well. Yeah. So, that's a good point. Last thing I wanted to ask you about before we go. And this is another thing we didn't plan on, but access is one of the things that I hear a lot about as far as where people can go to hunt, to shoot, you know, with growing metropolitan areas. And, you know, where I am, we get little subdivisions in the middle of the country and they don't like to hear shooting, which it doesn't mean that you can't because it's your property, but it does mean that you sometimes have to deal with a hassle. And I'm always of the mind that I'd rather bring those people into the fold than start a fight with them. But I'm curious as to, because we have two kind of groups in HHI. One is the group that has been doing it for a while. They have their setup. They have, you know, they've passed the, or are in the biggest income generating portion of their career. So they can afford to do some of the more expensive trips, or they're just locked down where they hunt. And then you have people who younger, trying to get into it. Sometimes they have a young family and they're trying to, you know, afford all the stuff and then finding a place to hunt, especially in places where public land isn't all that easy to get access to.
Right.
I mean, that's probably more my bias than the actual truth of it, but I'm just curious of what you think about that.
You know, it's kind of like professional sports. That used to be the working man's entertainment, and now the working man can't afford to go, you know.
Right.
You have to watch the minor leaguers to go because tickets and, you know, the vending, you know, food and beverage, It's just astronomical.
Yeah.
And when I was a kid, I remember there was an older guy, he told me, he said, hunting's going to become an elitist sport. It's going to be for the rich man. I'm like, nah, there's no way. And going, you know, it's right, because like where I'm at, there's a few farms, there's not many, but there are. And anybody that has land, they lease their land out to large groups to pay their taxes. And, you know, we have a big hunk of land not far from me, and it's a bunch of doctors and lawyers. They come down from Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you're coming down to Maryland to hunt and you've got Michigan. Yeah. Just.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's what's happening. And unfortunately, it's just the name of the game. But, I mean, I'm fortunate in that we do have public hunting here.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just, you know, I won't go out during opening day because it's just, you know, crazy. You see the Orange Army out there. And
yeah.
I'll just wait till, you know, the second or third day and hunt during midweek when nobody else is out. But it is. It's tough. I mean, it's, you know, all I could say is, you know, you start knocking on doors and be polite and ask people permission and, you know, offer to do some yard work, or, you know, if you don't have the money, you know, cut their grass for the summer or paint their house, or, you know, just do the barter system and, you know, you might get access. That's really all I can offer.
Yeah. That's good advice. Okay. Before we go, can you, you can say no, but can you tell me, some of the things you're working on now or excited to get a chance to work on as far as what you're going to be writing about or putting on social media?
You know, I'm not putting you off, Ryan, but
that's fine.
I kind of fly by the seat of my pants.
Oh, I love it.
I don't know what I'm writing from one day to the next. Like I sit around. The hardest part about writing is coming up with an idea, something that's original. And once you get that knocked down, that's 90% of the battle.
Right.
And I have about 10 things on my computer and files of just ideas where I started so I don't forget them.
Mm-hmm.
And then as, you know, as time comes and I got to write something, I'll just snag one and just, you know, finish it out. And,
I hear you. I'm the same way, actually.
The same way. I write, it's so varied where, and it's nice because it gives me a large field to choose from where,
right,
you know, I can do a hand loading, a casting, or, you know, a new gun review, or, you know, a hunting story, or a goofy story, or something funny when I was a cop, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just, I'm all over there. I'm, you know, kind of scatterbrained that way. But, you know, people, I think they like that. Like, it's when you're sitting around read gun articles and all that stuff, it's, I think they enjoy the aspect of something that's just off the cuff and something that makes them chuckle or, you know, smile, or, you know, tell the old story of, you know, hunting with your old uncle or,
yeah, absolutely,
something like that, you know. So,
well, I think you just explained why you're interesting to read. But that's
well,
great.
I try.
Yeah, yeah. I know. You always just kind of just throw it out into the ether and keep those fingers crossed, right? I know how it goes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Tank, I cannot tell you how much I appreciate you sitting down to do this with me today. I'm glad to have finally got
pleasure.
To talk to you. I've heard about you. I've read you for quite a while now, and I really appreciate doing the podcast. We'll have to do a part two where we maybe can get into some more technical stuff. But,
okay.
Thanks so much
Sounds
for doing
good.
This. I really appreciate it, man.
All right. Thank you, Ron.
Okay, everybody, make sure that you follow Tank Hoover on social media. Check out his articles in American Handgunner and Guns Magazine. He's a very fascinating writer. He's fun to read. He always has new and interesting stuff. For instance, I was reading an article that he wrote about making your own cast bullet mold because he couldn't find one that was available to make a specific bullet he wanted to. Very interesting article, easy to read, good pictures. Found that one online. Anyway, follow him. That was another good episode. I had heard about Tank from some other HHI members, and I was just glad to have a chance to talk to him. And make sure you follow him. And thanks for listening to this episode of the Short Gun Sportsman. We'll see you on the next one. This podcast is produced by Handgun Hunters International. HHI is the only organization dedicated solely to supporting and growing the sport of handgun hunting. Membership gets you access to our great well-moderated forum where friendly handgun hunters of all experience levels share stories and information from folks that have actual experience in our sport. We also host giveaways to our members of guns, gear, and ammo every month, and each prize is worth several times what membership costs. In addition to this podcast, we publish a free digital magazine, The Six Gunner, which is written exclusively by HHI members. If you are a handgun hunter or support handgun hunting in any way, you need to be a member of HHI. Join today at handgunhuntersinternational.com. Again, if you have any questions on how to get started in handgun hunting, please reach out to me at ryan@handgunhuntersinternational.com. If you think we deserve it, please leave us a 5-star review and don't forget to follow Handgun Hunters International on social media at @handgunhuntersint. God bless and good hunting.